lesson four today. Well, we'll finish lesson three, real quick slide on that, and continue through the journey with Israel as they leave the sea and continue on to a couple different places that we'll talk about today. So timeline, real high level, so all of it leading to, everything is pointing towards Christ at zero, and then what we have to follow after that is us now looking back at all of that as history. And we've talked about the book of Exodus, kind of right here with Moses, is the foundation for the people's law, who is going to be building the temple of God, the sanctuary, how they're going to worship him, what God requires the Israelite, the Jewish people to do, and ultimately pointing towards Christ. There's a lot of foreshadowing in all of those things pointing towards him. This quarter, so we're focusing in down on Moses' life. Talked about in the first quarter, his 40 years in Pharaoh's house, the 40 years in Midian shepherding, and then ultimately his call by God in the burning bush to lead the people away in the Exodus. So that's where we're at right now, is the yellow line. We're only covering a very short period of time. And so today we're going to finish up Miriam's song from last week, and we'll start traveling with Israel as they leave the sea and discuss how the people deal with leaving the sea and how God handles the Israelites' situations. So with that, Anthony, would you mind praying? All right, so let's finish up the last piece of lesson three, because I combine the kind of the last question from lesson three into lesson four. I felt originally it fit there better, but now that I have a class back for the gospel meeting, I can kind of shift some things around, which is helpful. But Miriam's song, we talked very briefly as we were concluding class last week that first line, what Miriam and the women repeat, is the exact same phraseology that Moses and the congregation sing before. One thing that I said was, most likely it is they sang the whole song, because seems to be like this song is to be repeated over and over and over, because God doesn't want them to forget what he has done for them in the deliverance through the sea and the salvation he had there. Other thoughts on Miriam's song, or why it was called out, or anything that you guys have done in study around that? All right, good there. So one thing I did want to point out, I put up the chart Ben had from last quarter, and we have Moses, Aaron, and Miriam all related by their father Amram and their mother Jochebed. So we have three siblings that are extremely important and get called out time after time after time through Exodus, through Numbers, through kind of the giving of the law and their roles there. One thing I did want to point out is Miriam is called a prophetess, so obviously she received some message from God and delivered it to the people. I think if it's not just the song, there is obviously something there where she is, God has communicated with her, and she has given some instruction or some information to the people of Israel. So she's called a prophetess in Numbers 12, I believe it is. So there's that piece there. Any thoughts? We'll move on from here and continue on. All right. So, quick review of last week. So, where we ended last week was the song at the sea, or a song of Yahweh, or many different names, Song of Moses, whatever you want to call it. And we talked about how that song glorifies God. Like, that's ultimately the purpose of the song. How God is king, he's over all, he is all, he's holy, he's a loving God, he's a redeemer of his people. Going through all of that, we talked about the themes of the song, so glory, kingship, care for his people, the characteristics of God, his strength. Dakin pointed out, like, Dakin's concise summary is his, I forgot how you said it, so omniscient power, maybe is how you said it. Great summary there. Control that God has. And then ultimately, salvation. God is salvation. He saved his people, and that's what the people are singing about. Talked just a little bit about patterns of the song, and then foreshadowing to future events. So the promised land, where the people are going. They're going to Mount Sinai. They're ultimately going into Canaan, and in Jerusalem, in the temple of God. That is what they're pointing towards. That's their goal. Any thoughts on last week before we jump into this week and we'll read Exodus? All right. So I broke our reading into two sections for this morning because it is a long reading. So we'll read the first four paragraphs, leave the last paragraph on the first page. All right, so read Exodus. So Moses led Israel onward from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they couldn't drink from the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, its name is called Marah. The people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Then he cried to Yahweh. Yahweh showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. He said, "If you will diligently listen to Yahweh, your God's voice, and will do that which is right in his eyes, and will pay attention to his commands, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I am Yahweh who heals you." They came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. They took their journey from Elim, and all of the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after departing out of the land of Egypt. The whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. The children of Israel said to them, "We wish that we had died by Yahweh's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots, and when we ate our fill of bread. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from the sky for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. It shall come to pass on the sixth day that they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." So, as we read through that, Israel leaves the sea. So mentioned quickly last week, as they leave the sea, I can't even imagine what they're feeling. They look at the sea, they sang this song, they have a daily reminder of what God has done for them. And now they're leaving that, but they have a goal. Moses was told by God that he's to bring the people to Mount Sinai. And so that is their goal. So what happens very quickly after they leave the sea? What do the people start doing? Yeah, they complain. They start. 3 days, so they murmur after 3 days. Is that legitimate? Yeah. I think probably on the surface, the complaint may be legitimate. But what did they then start doing? It wasn't just a complaint. Thoughts on that? Yeah, Oren?
So I don't know if that the term that's used there, we should focus on or not, but it says murmured or grumbled, depending on the translation. Mm-hmm. And if you look those up, that's a low, indistinct sound, a rumbling sound. It's not something that's brought directly. So I think maybe what Stephanie was saying is where it's directed. They're doing it amongst one another. It's almost like, what do they call that? Not rumors, but when you're talking about someone behind their back. Mm-hmm. I think they bring it to Moses also. Instead of going to the source and saying, hey, we're thirsty, can you please find a way to solve this problem for us, it's talking negatively about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that kind of, Stephanie mentioned, they have a desire to go back. Yeah, Garrett?
Well, just like at the Red Sea, we talked about that it's okay to have fear if you give that to God and you let Him take care of it. Well, it's okay to be hungry and thirsty, and to be upset that there's no food and water to walk around in the desert, but you can ask God to give you those things instead of complaining about it and blaming Moses and wishing for a worse situation to run back on something that's far inferior to what you have, this freedom that you have now at least.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great connection, Garrett. That's where I was wanted to head with this is, like, they just sang a song. Like, this song is, if you get a song stuck in your head, it's there for a couple days, maybe at least a full day. Like, it cycles in your head. Well, that song that they just sang is probably stuck in their head. They repeated it time after time after time. It's talking about God and what He has done. And now they're grumbling, they're complaining, it's kind of a lack of faith. Like, they've lost faith after 3 days after leaving the sea. We'll talk in just a little bit about time. So there was probably some time. It wasn't, they cross the Red Sea, they spend a day there, and then they go. It wasn't that quick. There's some time that passes. But ultimately, so Israel complains, they grumble, they murmur, whatever your translation says. But ultimately, what's the outcome of that? They're talking, so it says, therefore, its name's called Meir, the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Then Moses goes to God, and what does God do? Anthony?
Well, I think we see kind of a couple things wrapped up into that. One is that God does provide.
Mm-hmm.
And He doesn't make a big stink, at least initially, around their complaining. But He does, the second thing there is, as He's providing, He's also doing this as a test to them to see whether they will walk in His statutes, give ear to His commandments. But He's kind of showing them that, they will come to Him. He will take care of them, and they need
Mike? That's perfect connection, because this is where we start to see that pattern emerging. So the people go to Moses. Moses goes to God. Well, that's a pattern that we'll continue to see throughout all of Exodus. But it's a huge foreshadowing. It's a huge connection to Jesus and us. Like, Jesus is in that place now. We have an issue. We go to Jesus. Jesus is one with God and is able to be that interceder. So I think that's a perfect connection in that pattern of where we are to go with an issue we have, and have faith that God is able to handle that, because a lot of times we can't, and the people couldn't. So that's a great connection. Dakin? Perfect example here and in our lives. We can get bogged down in many things that seem trivial, or may be trivial in the grander scheme of things. Other thoughts? Yeah, Elizabeth. Exceedingly patient. Dakin. I like it. That's what we're here for.
They are headed to a place of abundance, which is not 40 years away. It's more like, I don't know what, 3 weeks away.
It should be.
They turned a 3-week trip into 40 years because of their allowing this to come.
It should be leave Egypt, go to Mount Sinai, get the law, go to Canaan. It should be boom, boom, boom. Like, relatively speaking, quickly, not 40 years. So one thing I wanted to talk about is time. So don't have a great grasp on exactly days. There's people that have studied it. I backed it up because I exact times and dates. But we know Exodus 12 is instituting Passover, first month, first day. Like, we have God instituting. This is the new, your new calendar. So Exodus 12 is that. And that's where we see Passover, the 10th plague, the Exodus beginning. So God leading his people out of Egypt. And then Exodus 14, we see Egypt pursuing. Pharaoh hardens his heart one final time. God hardens Pharaoh's heart, pursues the people. God has laid the trap. He has led the people to a place where, by all physical standards, Israel is doomed. There's no hope physically for them. It is God in crossing the sea that saves them. That's Exodus 14, 21 through 24. They exit the sea. Exodus 15, what we just studied last week, is the song to Yahweh, song of Moses, and the glory that they're sharing with him and leading. Then ultimately where we are today is God leading the people away from the sea. So the end of 15, the first of 16:1, they enter, they go from Mara to Elam to the wilderness of Sin, and we have the call out the second month, the 15th day. So we have bookmarks of how much time has passed. So roughly a month and a half. So not a ton of time has passed from the 10th plague, crossing the sea, a song, Yahweh providing for them at Mara, Yahweh providing a place for them at Elam. And all through that, we have Israel complaining. Israel complaining. We're going to die at the hand of Egypt at the sea. We're going to sing praises to him after we cross the sea. We're going to leave the sea. We're going to die from hunger and thirst. God provides. So we see that. We'll see that continuing throughout this whole book. So keep that in mind. So we'll revisit this as we continue on, but ultimately their goal is Mount Sinai there. Thoughts on where Israel is, what God has done, or time before we read the second section for today? All right. Oh, yeah, Jen. Of God, because we'll see in not too many chapters that God does finally, he reaches a limit. I forgot what chapter it is, but he wants to destroy Israel and start with Moses. Like, they have done enough that he's finally, his patience has waned. And not to say that God isn't patient, because he then does endure with them. Like, he creates a whole new generation after 40 years. That's all. Time is relevant to God, or maybe more irrelevant to God, but to us, that's a long time. That's a long time to wait. So, great call out, Jen. All right, other thoughts? All right, pick up at the last paragraph on the first page. Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, "At evening you shall know that Yahweh has brought you out from the land of Egypt. In the morning you shall see Yahweh's glory, because he hears your murmurings against Yahweh. Who are we that you murmur against us?" Moses said. "Now Yahweh will give you meat to eat in the evenings, and in the morning bread to satisfy you. because Yahweh hears your murmuring, which you murmur against him. And who are we? Your murmuring are not against us, but against Yahweh. Moses said to Aaron, tell the congregation of the children of Israel, come close to Yahweh, for he has heard your murmurings. As Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, they looked towards the wilderness, and behold, Yahweh's glory appeared in a cloud. Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, I have heard the murmuring of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at evening you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am Yahweh your God. In the evening, quail came up and covered the camp, and in the morning, dew lay around the camp. When the dew that lay had gone, behold, the surface of the wilderness was a small round thing, small as the frost on the ground. Then the children of Israel saw it, and they said to one another, what is this? Or what is it? What is it? For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, it is the bread which Yahweh has given you to eat. This is the thing which Yahweh has commanded. Gather of it everyone according to his eating, an omer a head, according to the number of your persons. You shall take it, every man, for those who are in his tent. The children of Israel did so. Some gathered more, some less. When they measured it with an omer, he who gathered much had nothing over, and he who gathered little had no lack. They each gathered according to his eating. Moses said to them, let no one leave it until the morning. Notwithstanding, they did not listen to Moses. But some of them left it until morning. So it bred worms and became foul, and Moses was angry with them. They gathered it in the morning by morning, everyone according to his eating. When the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one. And all the rulers of the congregations came and told Moses. He said to them, this is what Yahweh has spoken. Tomorrow is a solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to Yahweh. Bake that which you want to bake, and boil which you want to boil, and all that remains over, lay up for yourselves and to be kept until the morning. They laid it up in the morning, as Moses ordered, and it did not become foul, and there were no worms in it. Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to Yahweh. Today you shall not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath. In it shall be none on the Sabbath day. For some of the people went out to gather, and they found none. Yahweh said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? Behold, because Yahweh has given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Everyone stay in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. The house of Israel called its name manna, and it was like coriander seed, white, and its taste like wafers with honey. Moses said, this is the thing which Yahweh has commanded. Let an omerful of it be kept throughout your generations, that you may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness, and when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. Moses said to Aaron, take a pot and put it an omer full of manna in it, and lay it before Yahweh to be kept throughout the generations. As Yahweh commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. The children of Israel ate the manna 40 years until they came to the inhabit the land. They ate the manna until they came to the borders of the land of Canaan. Not now, an omer is 1/10 of an ephah. Anybody know what a 1/10 of an ephah is? Other than an omer? I don't know. I wasn't going to go down that rabbit hole. So kind of our question is, God is testing his people. He is putting things out. So what I want to talk through here is the parameters or the framework of God's test. So what God is putting out there, and then we'll talk about how the people respond in the next question, and then we'll get into the Sabbath. So What are some of the parameters that God is telling his people to do? Yeah, Ben.
So I had four. Mm-hmm. Listen to God's voice, do what is right in the eyes of God, pay attention to God's commandments, and keep God's statutes.
Yeah. Basically, spot on. Anthony, you had something? Just got done talking about it is like the rumbling, the complaint of I'm thirsty, but this is, you have to trust in God. God is going to provide. Yeah. Other framework, other thoughts around kind of the bookends God is putting out there. So I had one more. Keep his law. That's where it was further down, where God is speaking to Moses. But kind of, I bucketed it in four: commandments, statutes, law. All kind of interchangeable there. But yeah, God is setting out the framework for his people. So by extension, so we talked about this earlier. Diligently listen. Well. The people appear to hear God. Like Aaron is commanded to bring the people forward. The glory of God appears in the cloud. I have to make the assumption they're hearing God speak. Like they see the cloud and God speaks to Moses. But Moses is the intermediary. Moses tells the people, and by connection, Aaron and Moses are talking and leading the people there. Yeah, Mike? That's a great reminder to all of us, like these people are not, they weren't free people before and knew what to do, how to live. They were, Ben talked about it, they were heavily burdened by Egypt. They were, you did what you were told when you were told to do it, and that's it. They're learning a new way. Yeah, they're and God is providing that framework here. Good point. Yeah, Ben? connection. Great connection. Yeah, Dakin?
Well, one additional thing is we're talking about their new responsibility and duty. They keep saying they'd rather go back, and everything they do benefits their enemy,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to doing things now that benefit themselves through God.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yeah, Garrett? Great point of the enduring patience, and I'll let Oren cover the golden calf. I'm not going to dive into that right now. Okay, so God lays out his framework, and then I think Moses then it gives the context. Like, God's provided, hey, do these things, listen, do what's right, follow my commands, my statutes, my law. Well, what's that mean? I don't have all those details, God. I think Moses fills in that spot. He says, gather each day according to what you can eat. He says, no one lacked, no one had extra. They were satisfied every day. He then tells them, don't leave it. Don't try to keep it overnight. Like, it's, then they have the repercussions there. And then he then provides, on the sixth day, gather twice as much, because the seventh day is the Sabbath. So we have a lot of teachers in the class. How did Israel do on their test? They pass? Fail? Let's see. Thumbs down? Yeah. So I think we have to look at, there's 2 million plus people. We hear about the people who didn't. It's always generals. The people murmured. There probably were people that followed. Like, most likely there were. But we don't know. But as a general rule, the people got a big thumbs down, I would say. It seems more like they didn't follow than they did. But what they failed is that, so we have the manna spoiling. Is that a legitimate? So we asked the legitimate earlier. I'm going to ask it again. What the people were doing seem legitimate to you? If you take away God, Moses saying don't do it, is that a natural human desire? I would think so. Yeah. If you could eat 3/4 of what you've gathered and be okay, maybe a little hungry, and go, oh, I could have a little bit extra in the morning. And it seems like a legitimate human desire. Granted, God, Moses says, do not do that. And we get back to the trust. Like, that faith that they have to have that the next morning, they eat quail at night, manna in the morning. They eat everything you got in your house, your tent. Everybody, so we have a family of 5. We eat every last bit of food that night. None left. That would be hard. That would be very hard to do. But I have to have the faith that God is going to provide the next morning. Other thoughts around Israel, their test, Israel's performance on that test, conclusions, points you want to draw out around that?
Yeah. So I have this thought. God is showing Israel people who he is. This is a new relationship.
I think that's a perfect analogy to our current day situation. Like, we should fight against being Israel, and it's easy to fall into that trap. Just the personal desire can get in the way of the faith in God. I see another hand. I thought I had somebody else. Oh, Mike, then Levi. The what? No, go ahead. There's a huge connection, because Ben talked about it, is Passover and then Jesus's sacrifice. Like, they're tied so closely together. And then what we're going to do is, this is a spiritual reminder. They had a physical. They needed a physical reminder, because they didn't have that thing. We have the physical. We have that. God has provided that, but we have a weekly spiritual reminder for that. Great point. Levi, do you have something?
Yeah, so you said something that just made me think of this. Personal desire gets in the way of faith towards God. And that's really, that's the whole point of this, I think, is he's trying to get their personal desire on him and not on other things. He's trying to get them to rely on him and not on their own survivability.
Mm-hmm. So God also institutes his day, God's day. So the holy Sabbath to Yahweh, so to rest on the sixth day. They're supposed to gather twice as much, prepare it for the next day. There will be no food to gather on the seventh day, and the seventh day is the Sabbath to God. So why is that important? What is the significance of that? We'll finish up. So Genesis 2:2. So I think there's a direct connection back to the Sabbath in Genesis 2:2-3, that God worked for 6 days creating the world, rested on the seventh. It's not called the Sabbath. Not in the translations I looked at. I think this is the first mention of the word or term Sabbath. And I think it's holy because God made it holy. That's it. Like that's why. It's God did it. God made the day holy, so therefore the people of God should be recognizing it. And it's a day to reflect what God has done. It is a reflection back on the last 6 days of, wow, God gave me meat every single night, bread every single morning. He made water sweet. He saved me from the Egyptians. It's to look back and go, wow, God has done so much for me. And I think we'll get into beginning of next week of kind of Jesus and the interactions on the Sabbath. And so we'll stop there. Last question on lesson 4. We'll finish next Sunday morning. Thank you, everybody, for participation.